Hebrews chapter 10. From what I understand, there is a sporting event on tonight called the Super Bowl. I'm aware of it. Tonight, what I'd like to do is I would look at the concept of assembling together. Since I have been here, I have never once preached a sermon on attendance. Some of you have been in the church long enough to know that attendance is often a favorite topic of preachers. I know of a few preachers I could just rattle off the top of my head who just seems like one of their top three pet issues is attendance. And in my entire life, I've never noted a substantial behavioral change to come in attendance by preaching about attendance. But with us giving consideration to the changing of time to the second service, our shepherds, I think, are close to making a decision on this and will communicate to us in the next couple of weeks what they're coming to the conclusion of. But I would like to ask the question, why do we assemble together on Sundays? Why do we assemble together on Sundays? When you look at the nature of our assemblies, it's certainly an important thing. I don't want to undermine the importance of our assemblies at all. And next week in the PM service, the elders and I are going to do a joint effort and try to provide a review of 2017 and then a more collective consensus about what we hope to accomplish in 2018. One thing that I'll do in that sermon is show some graphics that our sister Charlene developed for us about attendance. The attendance at this congregation overall has been very good. I mean, when you look at many congregations, the ratio of AM to PM services is often about 2-1. Here, we don't have anywhere near that issue. But when we look at our assemblies, we're thinking about changing our assembly time. I'd like to back up and ask the question, why do we assemble together on Sundays? So the text we're going to go to this probably shouldn't surprise you at all. It's going to be Hebrews chapter 10, verse 25. I want us to see what this verse is actually saying. This is a verse that I think has been way misapplied. And I want us to see in the context what the Hebrew author is actually saying. So let's look at this verse together. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 19. Hebrews 10, verse 19. Therefore, brothers, since we have confidence to enter the holy places by the blood of Jesus, by the new and living way that he opened for us through the curtain, that is through his flesh. And since we have a great high priest over the house of God, let's stop at the end of verse 21. You'll notice there are two conditional statements that the Hebrew author provides. Number one, since we have confidence to enter the holy places. Number two, since we have a great high priest over the house of God. Those two conditional statements are giving a review of what he's talked about really from chapter 4 through the midsection of chapter 10. Jesus has died. He now has become our high priest. And because of his sacrifice, we have access to God. So here's his point. Since we have access to God, what should we do? Let us, verse 22, draw near with a true heart in full assurance of faith, with our hearts sprinkled clean from an evil conscience and our bodies washed with pure water. Number one, let us draw near. So again, let's see what he's saying. Since we have confidence to enter the holy places, and since we have a great high priest, again, both of those practically mean, since we now have access to God, sin no longer divides us from God, but since we have access to God, number one, let us draw near with a true heart. Number two, let us hold fast the confession of our hope without wavering, for he who promised is faithful. Not only should we draw near, but let us hold fast. So here's his point. Christ has given us the perfect sacrifice. Because of that, let us draw near to our God. Let us come close to him in fellowship, and then let us hold fast the assurance of faith that we have. Let us not get back into the ways that were existed before faith, but let us live by faith. And then finally, verse 24, let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together, as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another all the more as you see the day drawing near. What do we need to do? Let us consider how to stir up. What do we need to do? Because we have access to God, let us draw near to him. Let us hold fast. Let us endure. And then let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. So here, there is a triad of imperatives. It's first person imperatives. What he's saying is, let us draw near, let us hold fast, let us consider how to stir up to love and good works. What then do we not need to do? Verse 25, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some. So here's his point. Because God has given us access through Christ, let us hold fast our assurance of faith, let us draw near to God, and then let us continually stir one another up to love and good works. So, do you see contextually what this verse is saying? This verse is saying, because Jesus has given us access to God, we need to consider how to stir one another up. Because sin no longer reigns in our lives, because transgressions against God no longer stand in our way, because there is no longer lawlessness that divides us from our Father, let us consider how to stir one another up. This is a blessing here. It's a blessing that we are able to enjoy because we are able to draw near to God. Well, what's the purpose of our assemblies? One reason I've not preached almost ever on attendance, not only because it's not as really needed in this congregation, but also attendance, I think, is often viewed as the end goal of sermons. You know, so long as we get people in the pews, that's all we need to do. We need to get our AM services up to 150. We're doing great. I've never heard that from one of our shepherds here, and I'm so thankful, because that's not the end goal. Brethren, what's the end goal? I'm going to hear it from you. Randy, what is it? There it is, saving souls. I knew it's exactly what y'all would say. The end goal is not just getting people in pews. There's a more important objective to attendance. There's something more important to assembling together. What is that reason? Again, attendance is not the end goal. Assembling is not the end goal. It's a method to a more important end. Well, to understand this, I want to look at the nature of assemblies throughout the Bible. Real quick, we're going to do a survey of assemblies throughout the Bible. Let's go back to Leviticus chapter 23 together. Leviticus chapter 23. In Leviticus 23, Moses gives a collection of various festivals and convocations that Israel was to celebrate. We're going to look at just one. Leviticus chapter 23, verse 39. Leviticus 23, 39. On the 15th day of the seventh month, when you've gathered in the produce of the land, you shall celebrate the feast of the Lord 7 days. On the first day shall be a solemn rest, and on the eighth day shall be a solemn rest. And you shall take on the first day the fruit of splendid trees, branches of palm trees, and boughs of leafy trees with willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God 7 days. We'll just stop there. For 7 days in the eighth month, Israel was to celebrate the Feast of Booths, the Feast of Tabernacles, the Feast of Indwellings, various names of it. If you don't remember the details of this feast, go back to your Levitical charts. We covered this one in depth. But essentially, this was a feast of celebration. This was when Israel would come in during the autumn time, and they would celebrate their produce. They would celebrate that all that God had given to them. Why did God want them to do this? Was it for the sole objective of assembling? Great, we've come together in the eighth month. Good job, Israel. No, there's something more important here. Look at verse 41. You shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. What shall you do? You shall celebrate it as a feast to the Lord. It was not just the purpose of coming together, but there was something else they needed to do. They needed to celebrate it. Now, let's go to Nehemiah chapter 8. You'll remember Nehemiah is written after the return from captivity. And as Israel had 70 years in captivity, they were not able to celebrate any of the feasts. So in Nehemiah chapter 8, they are reading through the book of the law, and they stumble upon the Feast of Tabernacles, and then they understand, whoa, here's a whole feast that we need to be celebrating. Let's understand. Nehemiah 8, verse 17. Nehemiah chapter 8, verse 17. And the assembly of those who returned from captivity made booths and lived in booths. For from the days of Jeshua the son of Nun to that day, the people of Israel had not done so. And there was very great rejoicing. And day by day, from the first day to the last, he read the book of the law of God. They kept the feast 7 days. And on the 8th day there was a solemn assembly according to the rule. Do you notice the nature of this assembly? Here Israel had been captured. They'd been off in a foreign land. And when they are brought back together, they assemble together. And notice what they did. They sat in wooden pews with a comfortable seat with solemn faces and had no sense of joy, had no sense of emotion, and they got their attendance in for the week. Day by day, from the first day to the last, he read the book of the law of God. And there was very great rejoicing. It was not the fact that they met, it is how they met that had such an impact. Here, the importance of the assembly, the importance of this convocation, it was not just the fact that it had to be done, but it was how they did it. They did it with rejoicing. They did it with reverence. They did it with faith. They did it with love. And because of this, it is going to bring about a spiritual change in Israel. Notice with me chapter 9, verse 1. On the 24th day of this month, the people of Israel were assembled with fasting and in sackcloth and with earth on their heads. And the Israelites separated themselves from all foreigners and stood and confessed their sins and their iniquities of their fathers. If you read throughout the rest of Nehemiah chapter 9, you have one of the greatest prayers of confession anywhere in the Bible. Why does Israel undergo a spiritual revival? Why do they undergo a true spiritual transformation? Why do they stand before God in reverence, confessing their sins? Because there was a spiritual change that their convocation had brought about. So here's the point in the Old Testament. The reason God gave them feasts and convocations was not simply for the fact of them checking off on their calendar, yay, we've done the Sabbath. Yay, we've done the Feast of Tabernacles. Yay, we've done the Feast of Weeks. Yay, we've done Pentecost. But each of them were for the spiritual purpose of bringing about a spiritual transformation in the people of Israel so that they would serve their God with greater fervor, with greater faith, and greater conviction. Go to the New Testament, it's no different. You go to Acts chapter 2, one of the very first things that we see the early church doing is meeting together in what the Old Testament would call a convocation. Let's look at Acts chapter 2, verse 42. And they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and the fellowship and the breaking of bread and prayers. And all came upon every soul, and many wonders and signs were being done through the apostles. And all who believed were together and had all things in common. And they were selling their possessions and belongings and distributing the proceeds to all as any had need. And day by day, attending the temple together and breaking bread in their homes, they received their food with glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number, day by day, those who were being saved. Do you notice here the early church assembled? Right after being converted in Acts 2:41, there they assemble. But if you look down to verse 46, what spiritual change does this bring about? Because of their assemblies, they have glad and generous hearts, praising God and having favor with all the people. And the Lord added to their number day by day those who were being saved. Here you have a people that are spiritually transformed. They are filled with generosity. They are filled with grace. They are filled with mercy. They are filled with thanksgiving. They are filled with the love of Christ. Why? Because they assembled. Now, brethren, don't underestimate. I'm not underestimating the importance of our assemblies. I'm emphasizing the quality of our assemblies. When you look at the nature of the assemblies, yes, you have to meet. But what should those assemblies bring about? It is not assembling for the purpose of assembling. It is assembling for a greater purpose. What is that purpose? A couple other verses. Acts chapter 6, verse 7. Acts chapter 6, verse 7. The word of God continued to increase, and the number of the disciples multiplied greatly in Jerusalem, and a great many of the priests became obedient to the faith. Why? Because they were assembling. Over to chapter 9 and verse 31. Chapter 9, verse 31. So the church throughout all Judea and Galilee and Samaria had peace and was being built up. And walking in the fear of the Lord and the comfort of the Holy Spirit, it multiplied. What happened? The early church multiplied. Why? Because they had godly, faith-filled, love-driven assemblies that brought conviction, that brought salvation, that taught the gospel of Jesus Christ. And because of that, then the early church multiplied. For us, then, what needs to be the outcome of our assembling? Yes, we need to assemble together on the first day of the week. Yes, we need to be commanded to assemble together on the first day of the week. But why? With that in mind, let's go back to Hebrews chapter 10. Hebrews chapter 10, let's look again at verse 24. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some, but encouraging one another, all the more as you see the day drawing near. There are two direct commands that he gives in this text that we need to accomplish in our assemblies. Number one, let us encourage one another. Look at verse 25. Not neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some. Now let's stop there. When you think of the context of the Hebrew Christians, why did he give them this command? The Hebrew Christians were on the verge of totally falling away from the faith. They, because of persecution that was being put upon them, were about to forsake Jesus Christ and go back to former ways, whatever it was. And here, they are completely forsaking the assembly. They are completely forsaking their assembling of themselves to one another because they are about to leave the faith altogether. That's what this text is actually talking about here. This is talking about those who are forsaking the assembly because they want to withdraw themselves away from Jesus Christ. They want to take themselves away and they want to leave the faith. When someone completely withdraws themselves from the assembly, that is a sure sign to our that's an alliteration I'm going to have a hard time getting out. That is a sure sign to our shepherds that this individual wants to withdraw themselves from Jesus Christ. Because they don't want to assemble anymore with God's people and they just want to do their own thing and live their own little life and whatever it may be. But not as neglecting to meet together as is the habit of some. But what do we need to do? Encouraging one another. All the more as you see the day drawing near. You look at verse 24, the contrast. Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works. Brethren, there's two things we need to do. We need to stir up one another and we need to encourage one another. That's the importance of our assemblies. It's not just that we check off on our checklist that, yay, we met on Sunday, good job, you're a great Christian, but it's rather the outcome of that assembling. It is, what are we doing? I could put a guilt complex in each of us about forsaking our assemblies. If you look down to chapter 10, verse 26 following, essentially he does that. He gives them a very stern warning. But his positive command is this: assemble together so that you may stir up one another and that you may encourage one another. Let me give you two illustrations very quickly. In November of every year, when I was in grad school, I would go to the National Communication Association. It is a collection of communication scholars from around the country, and we'd meet for about 4 days of scholarly discourse, and it sounds like the most boring 4 days of your life, doesn't it? I loved it. I mean, just to be able to sit down and ask somebody, so what is your view of discourse ethics? Do you take more of an ontological or an interpersonal approach to communication? And just having this vast approach with someone who loves the field of communication as much as I do. I would come back on fire. I'd come back and tell my advisor, I am just ready to fill the publications. I'm ready to do every bit of research. I'm ready to tackle every book. I was on fire. I was stirred up. Why? Because I was around those who were passionate about the same thing that I was. Bless my poor wife's heart, when I was working on my dissertation, and every single day I'd want to tell her, Jessica, listen to what I learned, listen to what I found. And she'd tune out for a good 5 minutes till I came back to reality. Bless her living heart. She just didn't have the fervor to understand multimodal approaches to communication efficacy. Doesn't it sound great? But then I get to go to a conference of people who stir me up to learn more about communication. You stir up one another. Brethren, I would ask ourselves, do we have that in our assemblies? Do we stir up our assemblies? Number two, do we encourage one another? Or do we leave church disgruntled by all the angry brethren that we're surrounded by? We need to leave encouraged, not discouraged. We need to leave stirred up, not taken down. I had an older preacher that warned me, Ryan, the biggest test that Satan puts upon every preacher is the brethren, and how true he was. It is so often that I, as a young preacher, would go into congregations that were dead and do nothing to me but discourage me and tear me down. And they were just angry brethren. Since then, I've learned to feel sorry for them and pray for their souls. I pray that their anger and their resentment and their hostility may be taken away and that they may have hearts of love. But brethren, our assemblies need to be filled with upbringing. They need to be filled with encouragement. We need to stir up one another. Rather than talking about what time we're going to move our services to, I would urge us to consider, how can we shape our assemblies to make them more encouraging? How can we shape our assemblies to really stir up one another? I wonder if I were to ask that question, if I would get the same fervor as the shepherds have gotten as they've asked the congregation about the time that we're going to move it to. I will tell y'all, and I'll be quite honest with y'all, I struggle oftentimes coming up with PM sermon topics. This is just coming from me. AM, I have my AM sermons lined up through about the end of the month of March. And I have a macro view of about 17 series that I plan on doing somewhere in 2018. My AM sermons are filled to the brim. I know pretty much what I'm doing the rest of the year. PM services, I just have more difficulty. Perhaps I'm a bit more tired. Perhaps I've already gotten most of my great enthusiasm out in the morning. This is where I could use some help being stirred up. Help stir me up that I might help stir you up. Let's let iron sharpen iron. Let's encourage one another, not neglecting our assemblies, but encouraging one another and stirring up one another so that we may glorify our God. What then does all this mean? You go just to the very end of the text. If I had to choose one verse that summarizes the whole book of Hebrews, it's Hebrews 10:36. For you have need of endurance, so that when you've done the will of God, you may receive what is promised. Why do we meet? For endurance. The Hebrew Christians had lost their endurance. They had lost their fervor. They were about to lose the faith. Because of that, they were neglecting their assemblies, and they were about to fall away from the living God. The Hebrew author warns them, do not neglect your assemblies. Stir up one another. Encourage one another so that you may have endurance. Brethren, I would ask you, and I mean this sincerely, what can I do to encourage you? I speak in our assemblies far more than anyone else. I need to know, what can I do to encourage you, to build you up, to uplift you, so that when you go out into spiritual warfare on Monday morning, you can know how to best be a servant for God, how best to be built up, and that you can have the spiritual energy that you need to get through your week. That's the blessing of our assembling together. And that, I think, is the importance of our assembling together. It's not just something that we check off on our to-do list each week, but it is something that gives us energy. It is something that uplifts our spirits. It is something that builds up our faith so that we may endure. Brethren, let's endure together. Get out your songbooks, please. So again, this is a two-sided relationship. As I reflect on sermons on attendance I've always heard, two things come to mind. And these are the questions I think we need to consider. Number one, for those of our assembly, those of our number, who do have difficulty making it, perhaps it's a heart problem, perhaps it's not, what can we do to better help them? If you look at our congregation here, and our shepherds are very well aware of this, nearly everybody that can't make it to our PM service, it's because of time, it's because of the late hour, it's because perhaps they're old and not able to have the energy to do both services in one day. Overarchingly, that's our number. How can we stir those individuals up? How can we lift them up? Older. They're older. There you go, Sybil. They're older. I'll correct it for you. I learned many years ago, you never call people old. I can get called young all that I want, but you never called people old. But if you're above 50, you're old. So when I said that once in a sermon, and I will never live that down, Andy Bard. Number two, I'm stirring y'all up, aren't I? Number two, how do we encourage one another? I mean, seriously, how do we encourage one another? Brethren, let's give thought to this. How can we really encourage one another and lift one another up so that we can all ultimately reach the goal of heaven together? Because that's what we're here for. We're here to get to heaven. And we want to know, how can each of us admonish one another, encourage one another, and build one another up so that when we stand before our God in judgment, He can say, well done, Manslick Road. Well done, my good and faithful servants. Enter in. Enter in and be assembled with my saints for all of eternity. What a glorious day it will be. If you need to respond to the Lord's invitation, come forward as we stand and sing.